Lady Isle 650 and Odessa Richmond Public Auction presents Driving with Zach Spencer. Now from Driving Television, here's your host, Zach Spencer.
Hey, and welcome to the show. It's great that you're with us here on CL 650. I am Zach Spencer, and we talk about everything automotive. I just got back from Japan, and I'm going to talk a little bit about it today, but really I'm going to push that to next week because I have a guest scheduled for today to talk about electric cars. So the trip to Japan was 5 days. A real whirlwind. Flew into Tokyo, spent most of the time in Tokyo. We did go 1 day down to Nagoya to visit the Mitsubishi factory where they make a new vehicle, speaking of electric cars, that is coming to Canada. It's the Mitsubishi Outlander plug-in hybrid electric vehicle. Now, for those that listen to the show know that I talk all the time about the trends and where we're going in terms of vehicle sizes and shapes. And Canadians have spoken loudly, and this is a trend that's happening all around the world, that people want small utility vehicles. For example, there's a brand new Honda CR-V that's just been released. It's all new for 2017. That's the kind of vehicle that people want to buy. They're not buying small cars as much. They're not buying subcompact cars as much. They want these small utilities. So that's one example. But the plug-in hybrid electric vehicle from Mitsubishi is the only one. It's the only vehicle that is a non-premium brand, like BMW or Mercedes, that has the availability to drive on pure electric power. It goes about 60 kilometers on just the battery, and then the gasoline engine kicks on and it reverts to being a regular hybrid. So I got to go to Japan to drive this vehicle on the test grounds they have around the factory. They have their own high-speed track around the factory, which was kind of fun. You know, in NASCAR, they have the big banked ovals. Well, it's just like that, driving this electric car. So I'm going to talk about that next week. But just generally being in Japan, my first time there was a real eye-opener. And one of the things I want to talk about with our guest in just a moment is there's this big push for electrification. There's this big push for reducing greenhouse gases. One of the best ways, in my opinion, and this is one of the things that I find governments are kind of falling into, is they're giving rebates to individuals to buy electric cars. And I'm not a fan of that. I think that we shouldn't be giving somebody, you know, $5,000, $8,000, $10,000 to buy personal transportation. Someone's giving me money to buy a car. And yeah, you are buying an electric car, but you're still one person driving in that car, driving to work down the road. I would much rather all of that money be put into transit. And when you go to a place like Japan, Tokyo has 36 million people. The entire population of Canada in one city. And you know, the first day I was there, I kept on saying to the driver, I said, how come there's no cars on the road? Like, where are all the people? I'm in a city of 36 million. It's one of the major capitals of the world. And there's nobody on the street. Well, not as you would expect. There's certainly not that many cars on the road. But wow, when you go on to the train and you get onto the subway, it is packed with people. Everybody takes the train. Everybody takes transit. They're not driving. And I think that we have a long, long, long way to go to improve our transit situation in North America, especially in Vancouver. You know, you go to cities like London or Paris, Tokyo, New York City, and subway lines are everywhere. Just this week, the Evergreen Line opened. And they're claiming they hope to have 50,000 people taking that Evergreen Line in the first year. And within the first few years, up to 70,000 people. Well, they had similar kinds of projections. I'm not sure the exact numbers when the Canada Line opened. But that Canada Line that goes from Richmond and the airport to downtown Vancouver is oversubscribed. You get on the train at 8 in the morning, 8:30. It's cheek to jowl. Everybody's jammed. It's kind of like Tokyo, but on a much smaller scale. And it proves, if you build a good transit system, people will get out of your car. People will not get out of their car for a crappy transit system. And we have some components of our transit system here in Vancouver that are good and some that really fall short. For example, you want to drive from Richmond to Port Moody, it's going to be much easier to drive than it is to take transit. So those are the sorts of things that really bubble to the top of my mind when I was in Tokyo. transit everywhere, trains everywhere. I'll give you one example. Japan is known for their high-speed trains. We took the train from Tokyo to Nagoya at 280 kilometers an hour. That's amazing. And it's quiet and it's smooth and you get to see the scenery blast by and you have no idea that you're traveling that fast. It just, you don't have a sense of it. And you get there in a very short period of time. I guess it would be like traveling from Toronto to Ottawa or Toronto to Montreal. That's how far we went. In a very short period of time, about an hour and a half. It was mind-boggling. First time I'd ever been on a high-speed train of that distance. There is one in Beijing called the Maglev that I took for a very short distance. That one went over 300 kilometers an hour. But you just think, I mean, we have nothing like that in North America. There is no high-speed train like that. And you know, the government wants to invest in infrastructure to help the economy move along. It's exactly what they did in Japan. Japan has had almost two decades now with very little growth. So the government has invested billions and billions and billions of yen into their infrastructure. And boy, it works. When you have a city of 36 million people with not very many people driving and really not that many people on the street, and then you get into the train system, it's like it's a totally different situation. And we'll continue our conversation next.
This is Driving with Zach Spencer, presented by Odessa Auctions. There's lots more still ahead on Sea Isle 650. We're back. This is Driving with Zach Spencer on Sea Isle 650, presented by Odessa Auctions. Don't sell it by yourself. Let Odessa sell it for you at odessarichmond.ca. Now, back to Zach.
Fun, fun, fun.
Hey, and welcome back to the show. There was a story that came out about the Chevy Bolt this week. Now, the Bolt, for those that aren't aware, just won Motor Trend Car of the Year. It's probably going to win the North American Car of the Year. And this is a fully electric car capable of going 383 kilometers on one charge. Now, this is a massive breakthrough. And it doesn't come from, I mean, Tesla has that capability, but those are $100,000 cars. This is a major breakthrough for a mainline car company, and it comes from General Motors. So kudos to them. And I haven't had a chance to drive it yet, but everybody that's driven it says that it totally exceeds their expectations, and it drives better than they had thought. It's beautifully engineered. It's not the best size or shape for everybody, but it's a very good first start, and I'm sure they'll be using that platform for the Bolt for other vehicles, and I would hope that it's going to be a small crossover vehicle will be the next vehicle that comes fully electric. But this report that came out this week stated from somebody close to the engineering team at General Motors. Now, it hasn't been corroborated, but this is what the source is saying, that Chevrolet and General Motors will lose $9,000 per car to sell them. And this begs the question, two questions. If car companies have to discount their electric cars by that much to get people to buy them, that is not a business model that is sustainable. Car companies are not in the business of losing money, okay? Now, General Motors, because they make 10 million cars a year worldwide, can afford to take a loss on their Bolt electric cars for maybe, the first 20 or 30,000 units that they deliver, say, next year. That's probably the goal, 20, 30,000 cars. So they can, because it's such a huge company, over 10 million cars absorb those losses. But they're not going to absorb those losses forever. And all the other car companies are not going to absorb losses like that forever. They will put the initial investment in, and they will discount these cars to get them to move. And by the way, the Chevrolet Bolt in Canada is going to be $42,000. And then you get to add on your money and my money, the tax incentives. Once again, I'm not in favor of those. I would much rather the money go towards transit, as I just mentioned. And that's what we have. So that's the one question. How long are they willing to sell these at a loss? And then that brings in the company Tesla. And Tesla has promised to produce, starting next year, their Model 3 at $35,000 in the United States. Now, if General Motors, a company that sells 10 million cars around the world and has 40,000 engineers, and they have plants and research and development facilities all around the globe, and a company that's been around for, you know, a better part of 100 years. And they have the know-how to make cars. They have the research and development teams to engineer the cars. They have the buying power. That's a big part of it. Buying power to buy the parts to get these cars at a reasonable price. And they have the infrastructure to move them and sell them to people all across North America because they have the dealer network. If they are losing $9,000 per car and Tesla needs to make a profit on every single Model 3 they make, that really begs the question how sustainable Tesla is in the long run. I've been saying this for years. I don't think they're going to be able to make a Tesla Model 3 for $35,000 and make a profit. General Motors, with the capacity that they have, cannot, in, as this report claims, make a profit or any profit on their car. And that's the kind of research and development they have. So stay tuned, as they say. All right, that's my lead-in to my next guest. Coming up after the break, we're going to be speaking with Suzanne Goldberg, and we're going to get into a great discussion about this. The pros and cons of electric, and there's many, many attributes for going electric, and it's going to happen. It is not a matter of if, it's just a matter of when. I'm seeing it from every single manufacturer. They're moving towards electrification. It's coming. So that's the trend. And we'll find out from Suzanne Goldberg from SFU about the trends and the way it's going next. But right now, it's time for a good news story.
And now, here's another good news story from Odessa Richmond Public Action.
Well, each and every week, the voice of Mark Bergevin joins us on the radio to talk about Odessa Richmond Public Auto Auction, cars that have been put in the auction and sold quickly. And this might be news to some people that there is another way to sell your car, because the old way, Mark, was you put an ad in the newspaper. Well, nobody does that anymore because everything's gone online, and sites like Kijiji and Craigslist are places where people post things. But there are some pitfalls with that, and one of them is safety. I mean, there's been some horrible stories about people taking cars out for test drives. So is this really prompting people to just basically drop the car off with you and then that's it? You don't see it again until you get your check?
You know what, Zach, that is cool that you'd ask about that, because this week we had a lady drop off at Town and Country, which is a, it's a caravan. So, she's a single mom. She's been driving this van, went in and got a new van, and, she was just concerned about selling this one and didn't want all these strangers knocking on her door at all different hours of the time, the day and night. And so she brought us a car, and we took care of the sale of it. We established a price with her and put it in the auction. And lo and behold, we gave her guaranteed funds 48 hours later. So it's fabulous.
Now, one of the things is, having sold a vehicle privately years ago, is how many people stand you up? Like, oh, I'll be there Saturday at 2:00, and you arrange your whole day, and they don't show up. And you're stuck there, waiting for them.
You know, that's it, too. Not only could it be, a stranger coming to your house, but it could be, strangers coming to your house and then standing you up and not coming to your house, I guess. So, yeah, You're right. There's none of that. We take all of that out of the equation. And, we sell the car for you and handle all of the, all the buyers, potential buyers. And we take care of it 100%, Zach.
Thanks a lot, Mark. We'll speak to you next week.
You bet. Have a good week.
Odessa Auctions. Don't sell it by yourself. Let Odessa sell it for you at odessarichmond.ca. There's more still ahead. This is Driving with Zach Spencer, presented by Odessa Auctions on Smooth and Easy, CIL 650.
My pappy said, son, you're going to drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving that hot rod Lincoln. Got a Lincoln motor and it's really souped up. That Model A body makes it look like a pup's. Got 8 cylinders and uses them all. Got overdrive, just won't stall.
Now back to Zach. This is Driving with Zach Spencer on CIL 650, presented by Odessa Auctions. Don't sell it by yourself. Let Odessa sell it for you at odessarichmond.ca. Now, here's Zach.
Hey, and welcome back to the show. It's great that you're with us here every single weekend on CIL 650, talking about everything automotive. And as promised, we're going to get into electric vehicles and kind of where we are right now with electric vehicles, the adoption, who's doing a good job of getting into electric vehicles, different jurisdictions across the country. And joining me is Suzanne Goldberg, Director of Research at the Sustainable Transportation Action Research Team, also called START. That's a good long name, and welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you.
So tell us, first of all, you're at SFU. What is START? What is the Sustainable Transportation Action Research Team?
Yeah, so So we are a group of, or a team of researchers in the Resource Environmental Management Program, and our research focuses on the markets, policies, and technologies that will drive a low-carbon transportation system, and specifically focusing in the Canadian jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm. So what is it that you're kind of mandated to do?
So our focus or our mission is really to look at the variety of technological options that are available to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in the transportation sector and help identify the policies and the market characteristics that will get us there. And really our objective is to inform policymakers and drive industry in terms of supporting them develop those markets.
So there's a lot of people on my side of the business. We're in the car business. I'm an auto reviewer. I test drive cars. I talk to a lot of designers and engineers and executives that make cars. And they are feeling, some of them, they say sort of off record, that the governments have kind of already made their choice about what they think the winner will be, and they think it's electrification. Do you agree with that? Do you think that the main push from most levels is electrification, not just getting people to downsize the size of vehicles or hydrogen cars or what other sort of combination of vehicles that are out there? Do you think it's electric?
You know, I think there's a range of policies out there that the government at different levels are implementing. So I think it's a range of technologies. We see a lot of visibility with electric vehicles right now. There's a lot of hype around them, and there's definitely building support. But we do see governments supporting downsizing, fuel efficiency with vehicle emission standards. We also see the government of Quebec, who implemented a zero emission vehicle mandate, which covers a range of zero emission vehicles. So anything that's electrified, plug-in hybrid, full electric, or hydrogen. So I think they're trying to cover the scope, but right now EVs are showing the most promise and visible interest from auto manufacturers.
Now, do you look at this at all and say, what's the cost, right? Because I know in the province of Quebec they have, you can clarify this because I'm just doing it off the top of my head, they have a mandate to have a certain number of electric cars in the market by, what is the year again?
2025.
Yeah, so that's basically seven or eight model years, six or seven model years away from what the cars are being sold. I'm already driving 2018 cars, right?
Yeah.
So, and the problem, speaking to the manufacturers, is to say, okay, if we're forced to bring in a bunch of electric cars that people aren't buying, we're forced to bring this technology in, that raises the cost of all of the other vehicles. So do you look at the overall cost implication to consumers? It's great to say, yeah, we should all be driving electric cars, but a lot of that comes at a cost, right?
Yeah, and that's correct. We do look at the cost differences between newer electric cars versus older conventional vehicles. And yeah, they do come in at a higher price, but there are other mechanisms in the marketplace that will help bring those costs down. And maybe not the beauty, but the interesting component of a zero-emission vehicle mandate is that what it's trying to do is encourage auto manufacturers and dealers to sell more and produce more, hoping that that will ultimately bring costs down as more of this technology evolves and production capacity or experience increases.
But the reality today is that we have, I mean, I was at the Paris Motor Show in September, and every single manufacturer, whether it was obviously Volkswagen, is pivoting towards electrification, Mercedes-Benz is going to have a full fleet of electric cars, so on and so forth. Every single major manufacturer that was there, and that's the biggest European car show of this past year, we will build it, will they buy it? Because today, 99% of all cars today are not electric. So how are we going to get there?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we do hear that a lot. Where is the demand? And something our research shows, so we, in addition to, you know, a policy analysis, we do a lot of market research. And in our latest study or survey, we looked at, you know, how many consumers might be interested in purchasing an electric vehicle as their next vehicle. And we found that about a third of the Canadian population is interested. But we also identify that there's, you know, a fair amount of barriers that are preventing them from doing so. And these are kind of where the key interventions in terms of policy, marketing, business and industry strategy could help at really helping to realize what we call that latent demand, that market potential that's there in an ideal world. So the key things we see are home charging access. So being able to install a charger at home and use it and having that process be accessible and easy to implement. Another one is consumer awareness. We also found that there's significant lack of understanding about, do these vehicles exist? How do they operate? A lot of people are confused between how, you know, conventional hybrid operates versus a plug-in hybrid. A large portion of our survey sample didn't even know they existed. And then another thing is the variety and availability, and this is something you brought up. All these auto manufacturers are introducing these vehicles, and when they initially came into the market, it was just a small segment of compact cars and sedans. And as we know, consumers like choice, and there's a wide range of vehicles out there to suit a wide range of needs. And so when we get the market to that level where a wide range of consumers who have different needs for capacity or speed or look, when electric vehicles are available, you know, across that segment to satisfy that demand, then I think we'll see those consumers who express that interest or have that latent interest start to get into the market.
Suzanne Goldberg is my guest, Director of Research and Outreach at the Sustainable Transportation Action Research Team at SFU. So why don't we talk a little bit about the study? You sent out a press release to me about kind of giving a report card on where we are with the different jurisdictions across the country. So we won't go into every province. Why don't we talk about the three biggest provinces?
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about Quebec, Ontario, and British Columbia, because those are the three areas that do have rebates available to consumers to buy electric cars. So how do they fare?
Yeah, so I'll just, you know, first talk about the report card in general. And it was really the first time researchers in Canada took a hard and honest look at how well we're doing as provinces in putting EVs on the road. And so you mentioned these three provinces. And they, you know, relatively scored high, but overall quite low performance. Quebec had the highest grade with a B-, and Ontario and British Columbia at a C-. And so it's a range of policies that are really driving these grades. In Quebec, what distinguishes them as the leader in Canada is the zero emission vehicle mandate we talked about earlier. So mandating that auto manufacturers who sell vehicles into that market provide a certain or minimum amount of a zero emission vehicle, so that being plug-in hybrid hydrogen fuel cells. And in Ontario, what's driving their policies, as you mentioned, is subsidies. So they have quite a generous subsidy, up to $13,000 to $14,000 per vehicle, and they also have some support for home charging. And in British Columbia, it's a mix of our carbon price as well as subsidies and support for home charging access.
Yeah, in British Columbia, you get $5,000 off the car if it's under $70,000, and then you get a sort of a cash for clunkers. You mm-hmm. have an older polluting car traded in for a clean, efficient car. You get a bump as well. Now, the reason I bring this up is because I know in jurisdictions like, for example, in Denmark, they mm-hmm. had a change of government and they eliminated the incentive to buy electric cars. And electric cars were selling well because, hey, someone's going to help me buy my car. That's great.
Yep.
But it went down to almost zero after they took the subsidy away, which I understand the notion that we have to try and get these things into the marketplace. But I'm a believer that I don't like paying for somebody else's personal transportation, like somebody buying a $60,000-$70,000 car and getting $13,000-$14,000 of my tax money
mm-hmm.
for their personal ride so they can ride in their luxury car to work. That doesn't float with me. I would rather they take that money and invest it in better transportation, because we talked at the beginning, the mandate is to reduce the carbon footprint and how much we're putting out. If we can get more people, you know, riding the subway and taking the bus. I mean, I brought up Paris, you know, you mm-hmm. go to Paris, you go to London, you go to New York City, and they've got an amazing subway system and transit system, and people in those big cities, they don't even drive because the transit system's better. So it's this push-pull, right? Like giving somebody $14,000 personal money to buy a car, I just don't understand that. I don't think it doesn't square with me, put it that way. So what's your answer to that? I'm sure you've heard it before.
Yeah. So there's a couple of things. You know, I think we need to look at all solutions for reducing GHG emissions, local air pollution, our reliance on oil. when we're looking at transportation, so encouraging more active transport, so walking, biking, skateboarding, using public transit. But at the end of the day, what research has shown and history has shown is that there's this affinity for personal transportation, for individual mobility in a car, and it's quite inflexible. So we need to...
So you're saying people are entrenched in that? They're not willing to change?
Yeah, there is a... People are willing to change to some degree, but...
Because there's this whole movement now to car sharing, right? So
we have
some people... I still think it's economically based. I think a lot of people use that because they can't afford a car, they don't want to buy a second car, so they do it as an inexpensive way to get that personal transportation you mentioned, right?
Yeah, and that you know, further emphasizes this intangible value, if you will, for that control of that personal mobility. And so there are a range of options we can look at. Subsidies or support that help bring the cost down. You know, when we're looking at environmental technologies, and in the case of the electric vehicle, the impacts of greenhouse gas emissions and air pollution are global and local. So when we incentivize or shift, individual choice, it has a net impact on the community. So we can frame it in that way. And another thing is there are ways which we can design policy to ensure that, you know, that luxury segment is not included. So Ontario and BC have both amended their subsidies to exclude...
So the guy that with a $100,000 Tesla isn't getting a rebate. That's basically what...
They might not be getting a rebate, or their rebate might be significantly reduced. So in Ontario, I believe it's around $3,000 versus, you know, the maximum of the $13,000, $14,000.
Yeah, and that comes back. I mean, here's the ironic thing about electric cars. I mean, I've been doing this. I've been test driving and reviewing, and I'm intimately aware of what's available in the marketplace. So we have these electric cars that basically the first generation mass-produced cars, the Nissan Leaf, the Chevy Volt, came out, you know, within the last 5 years. And... You know, the head of Nissan Renault, Carlos Ghosn, said he wanted to sell 20, 40,000 a year. They struggled for many, many years. Along comes this tech startup company out of Silicon Valley called Tesla, comes out with the Model S. People are lined up to buy it. They've got a huge waiting list to buy their next car that's coming out called the Model 3, and which proves the point, back to your earlier comment that these were little sort of hatchback cars, that if you produce a vehicle that people aspire to own, sort of the Mercedes-Benz of electric cars or the BMW of electric cars, then people will buy it, which sort of reaffirms my whole philosophy is that why should we be subsidizing somebody to buy an electric car? It's a status symbol. I know a neighbor of mine just bought a $130,000 Model X, the SUV. What else did they buy? A full-size Range Rover. So it's not always about being green. It's about status, right? And I think that's what Tesla has proven, is that if you build a status car, people will buy it. And these Leafs and these Volts are struggling to sell. So there again, why are we rewarding people with money to buy a car that they're buying it not just because it's green, but also because it's a status symbol? That's my tax money.
Yeah, well, I'm going to just address a couple things there. First, I want to address the fact that a lot of people don't buy electric cars because they're green. From our market research, there are a range of motivations. And if we look at those individuals who bought the first, second generation of these cars, a lot of them were really into technology. As you mentioned, some associate that with, you know, this symbol of, you know, it's a status symbol, it looks cool, a whole range of motivations.
Well,
other
there's
than
a lot of tech people want to have the latest technology, the latest phone, the latest computer, the latest car, right?
Exactly. So it's not just the greens. And in terms of this subsidy, isn't the only way we can encourage these vehicles to be adopted. I think it's a two-pronged approach. It's looking at making sure that the vehicles are available in a wide variety. They're accessible. People can go to a dealership and test one out, and the dealers are knowledgeable to address that knowledge gap there. And also to provide that incentive, that cost incentive, and doing so in a way where we're not subsidizing, the luxury vehicles.
But my point is that if you produce a car that people aspire to own, they will pay for it. Tesla has proven that. People will line up to pay $100,000 plus to buy a car. They don't need a subsidy. They're producing an exotic expensive car. I think their whole idea of going down market is a bad idea. They should stay as the Mercedes, Rolls-Royce, Bentley electric car company. There's way more money in that. But that's just my car side. I just want to take a quick break. We've been talking because I've got a few more questions for you because I want to ask a little bit more about your research. We're speaking with Suzanne Goldberg, the Director of Research and Outreach at START at SFU, talking about the electric car, electrification, where we're going. As I mentioned, right now, it's about 1% of the marketplace worldwide for electric cars, and some jurisdictions a little higher, like California is much higher. We'll get back into that next on Driving with Zach Spencer.
This is Driving with Zach Spencer, presented by ADESA Auctions. There's lots more still ahead on CIL 650. We're back. This is Driving with Zach Spencer on CIL 650, presented by ADESA Auctions. Don't sell it by yourself. Let ADESA sell it for you at adesarichmond.ca. Now, back to Zach.
Hey, and welcome back to the show. We're talking about electric cars, where we are, where we're going, and we have Suzanne Goldberg here, Director of Research and Outreach at the Sustainable Transportation Action Research Team. It's called START at SFU. And it's great that you're on the show. Now, one of the things that I've noticed, I got an email from Dennis DeRosier. Now, you might know who he is, but my listeners certainly do because I reference him quite a bit. He's Canada's leading auto analyst. He analyzes the auto industry. He's been doing it for 30 years. And the most recent email he sent out was about the trends and what people are buying, right?
Mm-hmm.
So compact cars, that's the Civics and the Corollas. These are small, inefficient. They're actually not so small anymore. They're all kind of getting a little bigger. I mean, the Corolla is bigger than it ever was. Same with the Civic. So sales of these compact cars have gone down. And the sales of SUVs has gone up. I've got SFU on my brain.
Yep.
So, and the sales of subcompact cars, the little cars like the Yaris and the Micra have dropped. They almost disappeared. And the sales of bigger SUVs, luxury SUVs, we're talking X5s from BMW, Q7s from Audis, have accelerated. So the industry is responding to consumers' needs and wants. They want SUVs and crossover vehicles, which are less efficient, offer more in the way, they're kind of like the new version of the family station wagon we might have grown up with, and people like that. So I think that the real secret sauce, and maybe your research has shown this, the tipping point for somebody going electric, if the car manufacturers can give me a small crossover like a Honda CR-V or a Toyota RAV4 that gives me the range, the power, the usefulness of that vehicle, and it's electric, and it's a reasonable price, maybe it's a little bit more, they will buy it. But we're not there yet. Does your research show that it's the size, it's the style of the car that's holding them back?
Yeah, I mean, you've just summarized it quite nicely. But that is, you know, of our past research over the past 3 years, that's one of our key findings or key messages, is that there is interest, but people need to have the vehicles they want, and they need them to be electric. So you're right. We need the trucks. We need the SUVs. And they aren't there right now, but we need to find ways to send signals in the market through policy intervention, through education, so letting the consumers know that what these vehicles are, what they can do, and then helping to encourage the auto manufacturers and the dealerships to provide these vehicles to the consumers.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, that's when we'll really see it take off. That's the tipping point.
Yeah, because, you know, they're, other than the Tesla Model X, their SUV, which is starts in Canada at 100,000, that's, take that out of the picture, because that's not the reality for 99% of the population. So, I mean, because I talk to the engineers and the people who make these cars, the amount of research and development and the time it takes to bring a new model to market is about 5 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
So just the next, starting next year, we are going to finally get an affordable, semi-affordable, $42,000 Chevrolet Bolt that's able to go almost 400 kilometers on a single charge. 383 kilometers is the advertised range, and some of the testers that have had it already are getting more than that, which is encouraging. So that's a little sort of hatchback car. But what we really need is to have that SUV, just like the RAV4, the CR-V, the Ford Escape, whatever it is, pure electric, and I can get it for a similar price. I think that people would make the jump. But as I mentioned, it takes 5 years to make a new car. So we're going to be, you know, into the early 2020s before any of those kinds of vehicles, if they started today, would be available. I'm sure they're already working on some, but it's a long process, because people come to me and they say, Zach, what do you think about electric cars? And my answer is, and I'm not sure if you've heard this one before, it's a great idea. I always say it's something that somebody else should buy, right? Everybody agrees it's a good idea. We should have electric cars, but you know, you buy it. I'm not going to buy it. And we see that people, when you do your studies, probably say, yeah, you said a third of people see it as an opportunity, right? But how many of them are going to act on it? That's the question.
Yeah, and that's where we see those barriers getting in the way. And one of those key barriers, as you had mentioned, is that variety and availability. So not just SUVs, but, you know, can I get it in my brand preference, my make, my model? And there is, you know, some lead time with research and development. But the electric car, I mean, so one study we did looked at 30 years of history of alternative fuel vehicles and looking at the hype and media attention and funding from the U.S. And what we see is there's been continuous cycles of interest in different vehicle technologies. And where we see it get sustained is when, you know, everyone gets on board, when the auto manufacturers get on board, when policy gets on board to support it, and when consumers get on board, so we have this long-term signal. And so auto manufacturers have, in fact, been researching electric vehicles and developing that technology since the 90s, primarily driven by regulation in California. So I do appreciate that there's some of this speed time, but I do see that there's tremendous push and innovation happening in the industry, and I do think we are getting closer to where we need to be.
I agree with that. I think that, you know, as I mentioned, I was in Paris for the auto show there in September, and every single manufacturer had a major electric announcement. But it's the old saying, if you build it, will they come? And they're all, I mean, these companies are spending billions and billions and billions of dollars. And having, you know, chatted with some of them, they're like, well, they better show up and buy them, because we've spent a lot of money making these electric cars. And we've seen in the United States that if they don't have a major price point on their cars, they don't move. In the United States, it's all leasing-based, right? So when you look in the United States, it's a much bigger market, obviously, than Canada, and California is huge. It could be its own country. It's its own ecosystem there.
Yeah.
So it's all based around leasing. In order to move Nissan Leafs, they had to get them down to $199 a month. That's the barrier that these companies are looking at. And that's my worry, is that they're going to produce all of these cars, and unless you can do it at the same price or less to get me to take it on, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see if they can make any money at it. I mean, business isn't in it to make money. So we have to encourage them to make money, or else they might not make the cars or invest in the research and development.
Yeah. And another thing to add to that is, you know, educate consumers, let them know that this vehicle exists. But that brings me back to my point about long-term policy signals. You know, I think auto manufacturers at some level appreciate that. If they're spending all this money, they want to know that the commitment and investment from government is in there to support this technology.
Or say, like, you have to put the infrastructure in for charging. If we're going to make these cars, there's no good if nobody can charge them up.
Yeah, or, you know, with any type of alternative fuel, supporting infrastructure, development, demand, you know, and encouraging them to do so, setting targets, all the signals that say that we are committed to a low-emission vehicle technology future helps them with planning and investment.
One of the things, the easiest way to get people to look at new alternatives when it comes to transportation, but it is political suicide and no government will do it, is raise the price of fuel.
Mm-hmm.
If you raise the price of fuel 30 cents in Canada, trust me, all those people moving towards SUVs, as I mentioned, the market trend, they would all be looking for something smaller and more efficient. And some people might make that jump to electric. But, you know, that's the fastest way to get unelected, right?
Yeah, I mean, but that's one of our key findings from our report card.
Because it's fair. Everybody pays it.
Yeah, and then that, you see that, so back to your earlier example of people switching now to SUVs and larger cars, we see a lot of those, you know, body style shifts occur in response to oil prices. And, you know, the cost of fuel is a very effective way to get people to shift over time, the stronger the price signal. So if we look at Norway, there's a whole range of reasons why they have significant electric vehicle adoption, enormous subsidies, recharging They've supported that free parking, free ferries, but they also have a really strong carbon price, and so the fuel is so expensive. So
the irony is that the irony of Norway, just yep. kind of as an aside, Norway is the richest country in the world. They have the largest sovereign wealth in the world, right?
Yep.
Because all based on what?
Selling
oil. Isn't it ironic that they have all these huge subsidies for electric and they have all of this money to spend because they sold oil for 40 years from mm-hmm. the North Sea? I just think it's ironic, but good on them. But they can do it because they're so rich, right? And they're rich because of oil.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, sometimes you have to point that out because, yes, Norway can do it. I mean, we could say the same thing. We've got massive oil reserves. We should probably take some of that and put it into sustainable energy as well. Now, Suzanne, before you go, because I've kept you on way too long, and I appreciate you taking time, where are we with hydrogen? Because you talk with, say, like a company like Toyota or Honda, and they're investing huge amounts into hydrogen. Do you see... is the public aware? Is the government aware? Where are we with hydrogen? Because that is the real way to get people into SUVs and vehicles like they're used to driving and filling up at gas stations like they're used to filling up today, but with hydrogen instead of gasoline.
Yeah, so I want to say stay tuned. We're doing some research on the market potential, so getting consumers, you know, understanding their level of awareness, what their preferences are. But, you know, from what we see from government announcements and not government announcement, automakers announcements, there are less hydrogen vehicles being announced in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years.
But this is a 30, 40 year, 50 years even that they're thinking out. Car companies are thinking that far out.
Yeah, and there's definitely potential for that. I think there is going to be a lot of, you know, from our results, my hypothesis is there's going to be a lot of misinformation, confusion, understanding how these vehicles are fueled, how they're powered, etc. But I think when we are looking at significant reductions in greenhouse gas emissions and looking at the targets set out in the Paris Agreement, we need to look at all options. And any electrified vehicle, be it a plug-in hybrid or a hydrogen, is a contender. And I think, you know, vehicle manufacturers need to be looking at the whole suite of what's available.
And one of the things, you know, with the rebates, I'm going back to the rebates because it kind of, you know, I think that there's other ways to spend the money. One of them was what we did here, I don't know, 5 years ago, where you had a rebate based on the size of the engine, right? So we had a lot of people buying smaller cars based on the fact that they would get $1,000 or $2,000 off if they had a little four-cylinder car versus a six-cylinder, eight-cylinder car.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they do a lot in Europe is they tax the vehicle based on the vehicle weight and the size of the engine. So there's other ways to also get people to reduce the amount of energy they use that isn't punitive to their lifestyle, meaning they have to change from a regular car to an electric car. That can also have an impact. But and that can also be done with the same kind of money that they're giving people to buy a personal car with an electric car.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what our report card stresses and what our research stresses is that there are a range of options. There are so many examples out there, you know, in Canada, you know, internationally, as demonstrating policies that work, and they are not only subsidies, they're regulations, they're taxation. So it's about finding the right mix for mm-hmm. the political environment and for the economic environment in which it's implemented.
One of the things, the last thing is that, you know, you have to also keep the consumer in mind. What does the consumer want? Because a lot of these are, you know, these policies are made in kind of in a vacuum, and, you know, what the trends are, you know, what people want in cars, you have to supply them with that, right? And you have to give them incentives to make some small changes. But I'm getting off my high horse.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Suzanne Goldberg, will you come back? Do you dare? I wasn't too hard on you, was I?
No, I would totally come back.
Oh, well, that would be so nice. So when you're doing more research on hydrogen and things, we can talk about that?
Yeah, probably in January or February. We will know what consumers know about different types of electric and hydrogen vehicles and if they want them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be interesting to find out. Suzanne Goldberg is being my guest, Director of Research and Outreach, Sustainable Transportation Action Research Team, also known as START at Simon Fraser University. Thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
And that's all the time we have. We'll speak to you next week on Driving with Zach Spencer.